Well, I guess this afternoon is Chris Pinto, and Chris is a good friend. He's put out several videos. We carry Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, and then that wonderful video, DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. That's Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and that certainly won the New York a Film Festival Award for the Best Documentary, I believe. Was that just last year, Chris?
Yes, that was about a year ago in May, I think it was.
All right, fine. Well, now Chris is coming. He's very, very prolific. He's come up with a wonderful new DVD. It's called Riddles in Stone. And it goes into the secret architecture of America's capital, of Washington, D.C. What is the true purpose of America? Is it being manifest today in America's foreign policy in the Middle East, where the majority of the American people don't want to be fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, and yet the administration doesn't care what the American people want? They have an agenda. But what is the real agenda of what's going on there? Why did it take them 4 years before they wanted to begin even to think about putting enough men in so that they could maybe accomplish something? They should have probably put in 500,000 men if they really wanted to win the war, but they're not going to do that. So why do everything halfway and why spread money around to the very people who are killing our boys? Because that's certainly what Seymour Hersh points out in the great article that he wrote for the March issue of the New Yorker magazine. A lot of things just don't make sense today when you look at them objectively. But if you look at the riddles engraved in the stone images in Washington, D.C., a lot of things make sense. What did you learn, Chris, as you began to study the secret architecture of our nation's capital?
Well, you know, that's a big question. I learned so many things. In fact, I learned a lot more than I was able to include in this documentary. We were pushing 3 hours on it, and there's just so much information, so much history there. I did learn, I do believe, because generally speaking, the objections to this kind of investigation usually start with someone saying that they don't believe there is an overarching message that somehow or other ties Washington, D.C. together. And from what I've studied of the architecture, I would say that's false. I think there is an overarching message, and it goes right to the heart of the ancient mystery religion. It goes right to the heart of Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism and the philosophies of the secret societies that have permeated the ancient world and are with us here in America even today.
And I think it's so difficult for people to really understand that there have been secret societies down through the ages, and of course, for modern times, why we would identify them with the Masons and the Rosicrucians, but they're here, and the Rosicrucians are here and active, and you'll see their influence permeating every aspect of our society. But they were here when they were designing Washington, D.C., and you see those images, certainly. Certainly chiseled in the stone there, don't you?
Yeah, you really do, Dr. Stan. I think that so far from the reviews we've gotten from people who have seen the early editions, a lot of people feel like part two is even more powerful than part one. And I think it's because we have so many visual images that
you can see. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Chris Pinto, who had come out with a video about it a little over a year ago called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. And we carried that book, and it was an award-winning documentary. It won the New York... Was that the New York Film Festival?
Yeah, it was the New York Independent Film and... Independent International Film and Video Festival. That's the one.
All right, fine. Of course, it's a DVD. And then, of course, he's come out with a new DVD. It's called Riddles in Stone. And it goes into what you would see if you went to Washington, D.C. and actually looked there with a questioning eye, all these signs of the zodiac. all the basic replications of Baal. Why would we have replications of this demonic god there in Washington, D.C.? Why would we suddenly have so many references, and even the street layout in the form of an incomplete pentagram? There was a purpose behind the formation of our nation's capital, because there were people who had a different agenda when America was created, and they hoped one day to have America lead the whole world into a one-world government and a new world religion. Is that being carried out today? Well, Chris, why don't you go on with what you were telling us about what you learned as you began going there and studying actually there, and you had the opportunity to get into places where most people have never been before, and studying this secret architecture of our nation's capital.
Yeah, you know, I took two trips to Washington, D.C., a week at a time on each of them. And the first time we did a lot of exterior stuff. I mean, it was really all exterior stuff, the buildings, the tympanums, a number of the monuments and statues that are there. It's very difficult right now to do any kind of filming in Washington, D.C. Since 9/11, they've really locked down the city with heavy security. So we were approached probably half a dozen times every day by the police asking us, what are you doing? You know, why do you have this camera here? Blah, blah, blah. And they would ask to see our permits, which thankfully we had obtained beforehand. So we did a lot of filming on the outside of the well, not the outside, but on the outer buildings and so on. And then we came back, and I was putting the script together and shooting reenactments and doing all the interviews and stuff. And we ended up getting a phone call from a guy there in Washington, D.C. Turns out he was a Christian man. And he worked for...
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris was just talking about all the problems that he'd had, you know, during the initial filming, because, of course, the Office of Homeland Security and the threat of a terrorist attack, and he was somewhat limited in the information he was getting. And then, after coming back and really beginning to put together all the film footage, out of the blue, almost as if by divine intervention, they get a call from a Christian man back in Washington, D.C., who knows about their project, who knows, of course, where so many of these occult emblems are there in these various buildings. You pick up the story, Chris.
Yeah, he was a very, very nice man, but he had been following the progress of the documentary online. And he called up and he said, you know, I was reading about what you guys are doing. I think this is an exciting project. And he said, I'm part of the Capitol Police, and I work inside the U.S. Capitol. Have you guys been able to get inside any of these buildings? And we said, well, no, not yet. And he said, well, would you like to get inside some of these buildings? And so obviously we said, yeah, of course. And so he was able to get us, to grant us access, and he basically became my tour guide. I flew back out there, and so we went inside the U.S. Capitol building. We were in the Senate, the House of Representatives, through some of the underground tunnels that they have inside the Capitol, which only the people who work there are able to get through. But it's really kind of fascinating. I wasn't aware that beneath the Capitol, you know, the Capitol, Senate, House of Representatives, all those buildings there surrounding the Capitol are all connected underground. And there are, you know, different ways to access them and so on. But it was really quite fascinating. And but inside the Capitol building itself, as soon as you walk in, there are just spectacular works of art. You know, carvings and paintings and all kinds of stuff that just seem to layer the whole of the interior itself.
But these aren't Christian at all. Many of them are not. Is that true?
I didn't really see any of them that were Christian.
And a lot of this is just plain pagan. In fact, much of this is really involved with the occult. So what's that doing in our nation's capital?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't see how anybody could go in there, look around at what they've got, and find any sort of a Christian influence at all. You've got a lot of pagan, ancient mystery images. You've got Neptune. You've got Europa riding on the back of a bull. You've got all these different, you've got Athena everywhere, Mercury, Hermes, you know, the gods of Greece and Rome dominantly are portrayed throughout the inner workings. And then, of course, there's a lot of statues of famous Americans, a lot of Americans most people have never heard of and so on, that are all throughout the interior there.
Well, what about Francis Bacon? Were there any statues of Bacon or anything attributable to Francis Bacon, the Rosicrucian who had always dreamed that America would become the new Atlantis?
Certainly. In fact, when you go into the Library of Congress, I would have to say, as far as the interior is concerned, is probably the most spectacular looking building anywhere in Washington, D.C., and would stack up against many places in Europe as well. It's completely paganized. You have these huge columns that go up, and these sweeping archways, and you've got all of this detailed work that's being carved into the stone there, and zodiacs all over the ceiling. It's very, very colorful.
And I think people have to understand, how many zodiacs are there in Washington, D.C.? You know, the zodiac, of course, is founded in the occult. And yet you see these occult figures everywhere in our nation's capital. Do you have any idea how many zodiacs are there?
I know. Well, there you've got complete zodiacs. There's more than 20 complete, where you have the whole zodiac presented. And then you have a number of partial zodiacs, where you'll have one or two or three zodiac symbols that appear on various monuments and so on. But the zodiac does play a very important role. I did want to say on Sir Francis Bacon that Bacon is found inside the Library of Congress in the main library, in the reading room that they have. And up above they have like a series of statues that go around of, and the names written of the great literary minds of the ancient world, and Bacon is counted among them. Bacon's phrase, his famous saying, knowledge is power, is carved on the wall inside the Library of Congress. They have another one of his phrases carved above a statue representing philosophy. So Bacon is acknowledged there, but he's while he's given a place of prominence, he's acknowledged alongside other great, you know, writers and thinkers throughout really the esoteric philosophic world.
Because Bacon was a Rosicrucian, and he actually had, I think he died in 1626. But it was his dream that inspired the Rosicrucians to leave England and come to America. And his dream of the New Atlantis, America was to be the New Atlantis, to lead the world into the New World Order, the New World Religion. So why then would we be attributing anything to Bacon? Why would we have his statue in the Library of Congress? I mean, here's a man who, of course, repudiated everything that Christianity stands for.
Well, certainly he had it. He held a very Bacon was, you know, his New Atlantis, the subtitle for it was the New Atlantis, the land of the Rosicruce, meaning the land of the Rosicrucians. And so he was at heart a Rosicrucian. And Rosicrucianism is, I think, the key to understanding a lot of the confusion about early America, especially during the Revolutionary War period. Because Rosicrucianism is what happens when you combine Christianity and the pagan mystery religions. And, you know, the symbol, of course, is the rose and the cross. And as we explain in Riddles and Stone, the cross symbolizes Christianity, but the rose symbolizes, it's a symbol for secrecy. In Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, they always talk about things being sub rosa, meaning secret, and that's a reference to secret societies and the secrets of the ancient mysteries that were preserved by the priestcraft of the ancient world. And so Rosicrucianism is the combining of these ideas. And Rosicrucians get into magic, they get into alchemy, they get into all kinds of stuff, and they blend it with Christianity. And when you, you can even call it mystical Christianity. And when you study Rosicrucian writings, a lot of times if you just read one or two paragraphs of a particular work, it could come across and sound like something very Christian. When it's not at all Christian, that's not the way they mean it. And we try to explain that in the documentary to show people this Rosicrucian philosophy, which seems to have been certainly held by a certain number of the founding fathers. I think Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson certainly held Rosicrucian ideals. If you read their writings and the way that they approach things, they seem to be. And in fact, Franklin is openly considered by modern Rosicrucians as one of their own. I think Jefferson, some people speculate. I know some esoterics think he was, but are not completely certain. But Rosicrucianism, I think, because of Bacon, plays a very important role. In fact, the state of Virginia, you think about the Virginia Company, which was the first company that had come over to build at least a successful or a lasting colony. There was Sir Walter Raleigh beforehand, but that was the lost colony. The Virginia Company is very interesting. You look at the Virginia state seal, and the image that appears on the Virginia state seal is Pallas Athena. It looks identical to the goddess that's pictured wearing the helmet, holding a spear, looks identical to Pallas Athena. And Pallas Athena was the goddess that was essentially revered by Sir Francis Bacon. She was his muse, as it were. And he named his Knights of the Helmet, which was his literary society, after the concept of the helmet of Athena, a helmet that symbolizes both wisdom and then invisibility, the idea of secrecy. Bacon, according to David Ovison in his book on the architecture of Washington, D.C., Bacon was one of the financiers of the Virginia Company. And this is where you begin to see very direct links between the Baconian Circle in England, which we talk about in The New Atlantis, Volume 1, and that company of both Rosicrucians and Freemasons coming to America to launch this esoteric empire. And it would really seem that through the era of the American Revolution, their influence began to come more to the forefront and become stronger, as it were, and certainly became entrenched in the American government.
And I think what people have to understand is that there were two forces in America. One was the Christian, and certainly the majority of our founding fathers were Christians, but there was the occult. And, of course, the occult is, by very definition, is hidden. Because, of course, in those days, and there still was the tradition of people, of burning people at the stake or ostracizing them for their occult beliefs, because these people were deeply tied into worship of Satan and worship of Lucifer. And of course, that was the secret of the power that many of these people could amass. They would tap into this other dimension, and there is another dimension there. And of course, our founding fathers who were Christians recognized or told in the scriptures to avoid this at all, in every possible way, to avoid the mediums and the diviners and the fortune tellers and the people who do tap into this other dimension. So it was always secret. It always had to be secret. But now it's coming to the fore, increasingly. And we'll talk more about that when we get back here in just a moment with Chris Pinto. His latest DVD, a great DVD, Riddles in Stone. Well, Chris picked the story up there. Certainly it's fascinating as I was watching your DVD for the second time last night and seeing those pictures of, the statue of Bacon, Sir Francis Bacon, there in our the Library of Congress. I mean, certainly he has nothing to do with America other than his connection to Rosicrucianism and the dream that one day they would use America and America's foreign policy to fulfill their dream, their destiny.
Yeah, certainly. I think Bacon's plan, like you said, Dr. Stan, America certainly began at Plymouth. I think it's clear They began as a Christian society. You had Bible-believing Christians were there. They were trusting in the Lord Jesus Christ. They were building their churches. And as Ian Taylor says in part one, they wanted to build their churches and worship the Lord, and that's what they wanted to do. But they were not alone. And it would just seem that there has been a progression. It would seem that the secret societies, the Rosicrucians, the Freemasons, Manly Hall says in his book, The Secret Destiny of America, he talks about how the pagan intellectuals, he says, reclothed their original ideas in a garment of Christian phraseology. And they bestowed the secrets of the real meaning only upon those that were duly initiated. And, of course, he's talking about these secret societies that made an outward show of Christianity so that they could win approval among the people, but inwardly they had an inner doctrine and a hidden agenda that they kept secret from the rest of society, with the hope that that inner agenda would come to the forefront more and more as their plan moved forward. And I think that's, you know, as we try to tie in, that's what we're seeing happen in America today. President Bush has all but admitted that he is following this ancient plan.
And, of course, you have that quotation from President Bush as he talks about, you know, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. I mean, that is a devastating statement, because what he really is talking about what's going on today.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's describing in 2005, as you said, one, this ancient hope, and then we show later on in the film something that I know Dr. Stan has spoken about a great deal, and that is the book by Dr. James Billington, Fire in the Minds of Men. And if you read Billington's book, Billington is writing about the revolutionary movement of the 18th and 19th and even into the 20th centuries, and he's writing that this fire in the minds of men is this revolutionary faith. Well, Billington himself traces that faith back to the Bavarian Illuminati in Germany. And he says, really, that the spark that lit this fire was not the French Enlightenment, as many people believe, but rather the occultism and pro-romanticism of Germany. And that's what Billington says. And again, he's the 13th Librarian of Congress. He's not some conspiracy writer, you know. He's a very official guy. And he's setting down and documenting the history of this revolutionary movement.
Hold that thought, Chris. We'll be back in just a moment here with Chris Pinto. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris was simply talking about a book, one of the most important books in my library. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men. It's written by James H. Billington, who is the Librarian of Congress, certainly an establishment historian. But he talks about this world revolution, this world revolutionary movement that began with the French Revolution and continues right up until the time the book was written. He follows it all the way through the revolution in Europe, and then revolutions, of course, in Russia, and the revolution then in Cuba in 1959, all part of a continuing revolution. Well, that revolution is continuing today. The American government toppled the government in Nepal and turned it over to the Maoists. Most Americans are so busy watching Iraq, they're not watching what's happening in Nepal. As nation after nation, we topple the existing government and turn it over to the communists, which doesn't make sense if communism's really the enemy. And maybe it is that nothing is as it appears to be. But of course, James H. Billington pointed out so well that the world revolution, contrary to everything we have been told, is not related to the French Enlightenment and Voltaire and Rousseau, but to this world occult movement that began when aristocrats began to take their candles off of Christian altars and move them onto Masonic altars, and of course this then led to the formation of the Bavarian Illuminati. Chris, go ahead with the story.
Well, with that in mind, and that is the backdrop, that Billington makes it very, very clear that the origin of this revolutionary fire is, in fact, the Bavarian Illuminati. And he focuses on some other movements, and he says, well, they're dominant or whatever. And he says, but, you know, all of these movements basically were influenced by Adam Weishaupt's movement in Germany. And so basically the Bavarian Illuminati put the fire in the minds of men. And then we show the clip from President Bush's 2005 inaugural address, where he says, you know, he says, we have lit a fire as well, a fire in the minds of men. And he says, it warms those that feel its power, it burns those that fight its progress, and one day this untamed fire of freedom will reach the darkest corners of our world. And by all accounts, it seems as though President Bush is saying that this revolutionary fire is going to take over the world.
And that's exactly why we're in the Middle East today. It doesn't have anything to do with Israel. It doesn't have anything to do with the oil. They're just side issues. The major thing is America, with troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world, is going to unite the world and destroy any government that stands in the way. And that's what Saddam Hussein's government is doing. That's what the Iranian government is doing. That's what the Saudi Arabian government doing, the Kuwaiti government, and the Egyptian government. And one by one, of course, they will fall in what lies ahead. That is the frightening thing, as we move to totally destabilize the Middle East. That is my fear. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, that's something that we talk about, and we step into moments like that historically, but we keep trying to bring it back in Riddles and Stone to the architecture of Washington, D.C., and we present what I think is some pretty strong evidence that the philosophy of the Illuminati, and in fact the whole revolutionary movement, because they were all interrelated. That's the fascinating thing about Billington's book. Is that he's showing this relationship between all of these revolutionary movements in France and Germany, in Russia, and so on, that they were following a similar influence. And what he has a section in his book where he talks about the Pythagorean passion.
And I think that's so important. Would you explain why that's important?
Well, it's a reference to the ancient Greek philosopher Pythagoras. And Pythagoras, while there's a lot we could say about him, the two big things he's known for are Pythagorean geometry and Pythagorean mathematics. And so Pythagoras believed, he applied an occult inner meaning to numbers. And he also applied an occult inner meaning to geometric shapes, circles, triangles, squares, and so on. It's from Pythagoras that we get the Pythagorean theorem. Which I guess we could talk more about, but it does take a little while. But that theorem is at the heart of much of Freemasonic and even Rosicrucian doctrine, and it has a lot to do with the architecture of Washington, D.C.
And I think Chris really brings that out really very, very well, and to actually see it laid out diagrammatically. And, of course, one thing that Pythagoras wrote about was that A square plus B square equals C square. The square root of the two sides of a right-angle triangle is equal to the hypotenuse of the right-angle triangle. And there you'll see it laid out in the architecture of the unit of Washington, D.C., right in front of the Capitol building. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and go right ahead and pick the story up, Chris.
Well, we were talking about Pythagoras and the Pythagorean passion of the revolutionaries. I was really surprised when I read James Billington's book, how much time and attention he gave to this issue, and how much Pythagoras, in fact, Adam Weishaupt, which a lot of people are familiar with, the founder of the Bavarian Illuminati, his final... he wrote, I guess, an essay or a pamphlet, some booklet of some kind, describing the ultimate plan for the Illuminati right before the French Revolution broke out. And the name of this treatise was, quote, Pythagoras. Okay, that's what he called it. So Pythagoras was that important. They were apparently, according to Billington, these revolutionaries at different levels were forming different groups, different societies, and so on, all based upon this Pythagorean philosophy that they were wrapped up in.
For our listeners, of course, Pythagoras lived about, I figure, 500 B.C. It was about that time that he was forming his mystery school in Greece after having gone to the Near East and gotten the secret knowledge that was available there to those who were associated with the mysteries. So he comes back to Greece, he forms a mystery school, and it is from that that come the Pythagorean a dictum, and then, of course, you're seeing, here, what is it, right to, before 1789, and that is A.D., why you're seeing Adam Weishaupt writing about Pythagoras. So it all ties together, is the continuation of the secret knowledge, which is there, of course, to be tapped by those who are disciples of the mysteries. Go ahead.
Well, Pythagoras plays a very big role in Masonic lodges, and this is where I think you find a very clear connection in Freemasonry and Pythagorean philosophy. In fact, the pentagram, which is a really controversial symbol, a lot of Freemasons try to separate themselves from it, but Pythagoras referred to the pentagram as the pentalpha. Had to do with, they called it the five angle, and was a reference to the five. If you were to look at a pentagram, you could break it off into five A's, like in the letter A. And so penta, five, alpha, A, the Greek letter A. So Pythagoras called it the pentalpha. Well, there are pentalpha Masonic lodges all over America. When I was doing my research, I found all of these pentalpha lodges in New York and different places around the country and so on. But it's glorifying the philosophy of Pythagoras. Finding the pentagram north of the White House in Washington, D.C.
Hold that thought just
sure.
A moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, everything has to be secret. They cannot let the American people know the truth, or they might begin to understand what our current foreign policy is really all about. And Chris was just saying, the strong influence of Pythagoras and the pentagram in Sydney and the formation of this country, and the fact that if you look there on the map of Washington, D.C., you will find an incomplete pentagram centered right there at the Capitol building. So pick the story up.
Well, I was talking about the pentagram just north of the White House with the White House as the base of the inverted part of the star, yeah? And so there's the pentagram, which is acknowledged by Pythagoras, but then you have the inverted pentagram. Now, what is often given out by Freemasons and people involved in the occult is that the idea of an inverted pentagram as a symbol for evil was something that was made up by Eliphas Levi, who was a 19th century French occultist, very influential man, a very influential occult writer. He was a Freemason for a brief time, but more importantly, he influenced a number of other Masonic philosophers such as Albert Pike and Manly P. Hall. But it's often said that Levi just randomly presented the inverted pentagram as a symbol for evil. Well, when we were doing our research, I came across a guy named Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa, who lived back in the 1500s, and in 1509 he published a book called Occult Philosophy. In this book, and Agrippa, by the way, just so people know, was a very prominent occultist and is well known in occult circles. He's mentioned in Mary Shelley's book Frankenstein. Dr. Frankenstein is reading the works of Agrippa. He's also mentioned in the Harry Potter books by J.K. Rowling. So Agrippa's well-known, and he's somebody that Eliphas Levi and other occultists would have been familiar with. And he was a German. He was a German occultist. So now this means that chances are guys like Adam Weishaupt and the German Illuminati would have been very familiar with his teachings as well, especially since they were into Pythagoras. And Agrippa describes in his writings now, hundreds of years earlier, the inverted pentagram. And he calls it the pentagram of Pythagoras. Again, another reference to Pythagoras. Well, to the Pythagoreans, the inverted pentagram was called the pentangle, or the five angle, sorry. And they believed that it represented the five chambers of Tartarus, one of the Greek words for hell. And that from this pentangle or five angle would come the spirit of the demon into the world, that the demonic spirit, that this was like a portal by which a demonic spirit would come into the world. Now, this is all the way back thousands of years ago. And they believed philosophically that if a man was to achieve higher wisdom, he would need to go through hell, as it were, i.e. the inverted pentagram, to get to heaven or paradise, i.e. an upright pentagram. And this is symbolized, we talked briefly about this, in, for example, Dante's Inferno. This is why in Dante's Inferno he goes down to the Inferno into hell, and he journeys his way up through purgatory up to Paradiso, up to paradise. That's the symbolism, and through that journey he achieves greater wisdom. So here we find the inverted pentagram thousands of years ago, and when we talk about the pentagram in the documentary, of course there's the issue that you mentioned, Dr. Stan, that in Washington, D.C., it's a partial pentagram. It's unfinished. Rhode Island Avenue does not go all the way to complete the pentagram. And so the Freemasons, and of course, if you watch the History Channel and the Discovery Channel, for the last year and a half, they've been featuring a number of documentaries on Freemasonry, and they'll talk about Washington, D.C., and they mention the pentagram, and they say, oh, the conspiracy theorists, they're just, you know, not doing their research and so on. And they point out that Rhode Island Avenue does not go all the way across. Well, then, while I was doing some research on this, trying to figure out how to talk about it, I came across Manly Hall's book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. And there, Hall describes the pentagram, and he describes the many uses of the pentagram. Well, one of the uses for the pentagram is to make use of a broken pentagram, an incomplete pentagram, where one of the legs does not go all the way. And so it's called a broken pentagram. And he talks about the use of this in black magic, in conjuring demons and this kind of thing. So Hall wrote this now in the 1920s, right around there. So we went looking for evidence. I thought, well, now, is there any evidence that this was a known symbol during the time that Washington, D.C. was being designed? And that's when I came across the play Faust by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. And Goethe published the first edition of Faust in 1790, okay? And it was between 1791 and 1792 that Pierre L'Enfant was laying out the street design for Washington, D.C. So in Faust, the fragment in 1790, in the exchange that goes on between Faust and Mephistopheles, the demon that he conjures, the devil, at one point, Mephistopheles makes mention of a pentagram on the floor. Okay? But it's not just any pentagram. It's a broken pentagram. It's open. It's an unfinished pentagram. And come to find out, as I was doing more and more research, this symbol is a known symbol in the occult. And what's even more interesting about Goethe is that Goethe, who wrote Faust, was a master mason. And he was a very famous master mason. In fact, the Freemasons love Goethe. If you look him up online and you read their essays and their magazines and so on, they just have all these glowing reviews of Goethe as this wonderful mason and an example of masonry and so on. And they talk about his work, and they talk about how from the time that he became a mason onward, all of his writings had to do with Masonic philosophy and symbolism and so on. And along with that, Goethe was not only a master mason, he was also a member, a very famous member, of the Bavarian Illuminati. So here we have this another connection to the Bavarian Illuminati, to Freemasonry, and this Pythagorean philosophy that's actually written into a play during the same period of time that Pierre L'Enfant, who was from France, where the French Revolution broke out, is designing the street design for Washington, D.C.
For our listeners, of course, L'Enfant was the architect who laid out the initial plan for Washington, D.C., a very temperamental Frenchman who, but he had an occult plan for our nation's capital. And I think it's important that people understand that the term occult means hidden, and they hide their emblems in plain sight. They always have. And they brag about it. They sort of laugh and scoff at those of us who really aren't smart enough to figure out what it's all about. And, of course, this is laid out beautifully in a book called The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Holm, which we do carry. It's not on a regular catalog. You have to ask for it specifically. But if you really want to do research in this, you have to understand that they time and time again brag about how they hide their emblems in plain sight. We also have a book by Kathy Burns it's called Masonic and Occult Symbols. And there are about 700 of them in the book listed there. You see them in every day, but you never recognize them. You never recognize them because they're hidden in plain sight. Go ahead.
Well, that was those are two of the arguments that we present for why there would be a broken pentagram. That it's not just a coincidence of streets coming together, but it's actually a very intentional symbol, and it's a recognized symbol in Masonry and in the occult as well. And then, of course, the third potential argument that we present is the star pattern. Or the rotation of the planet Venus moving around the sun. And this was something that we discovered when we were doing our interviews. We talked to Jim Allison. Those who may have seen Secret Mysteries 1, The New Atlantis, would remember Jim Allison. He's the one who talks about global alignments and how the five Revolutionary War cities are in alignment with Stonehenge and so on. Allison, very nice guy, and he talks about, we were talking to him about the pentagram, and he was presenting all of this information and so on. And then we asked him why he thought there would be an unfinished pentagram there. And he talked for a few minutes, and then he kind of paused, and he said, I've heard it said that the reason the pentagram is unfinished is that it represents the unfinished nature of the rotation of Venus. And we... David Bay and I were sitting there, and we were both talking to Jim together, and we thought, oh my gosh, could that be it? And we did some more research on it, and come to find out, among astrologers and astronomers and so on, this pattern of the planet Venus is pretty well known. And Venus, over an eight-year period, makes moves in rotation around the sun at five different points, and the points that it hits in the heavens forms a pentagram. But according to esoterics and certain astrologers, we quote one of them, who's a theosophist, and we show you a 3D animation to show you what it might look like. When Venus finishes its rotation, it does not go all the way. It falls short by a couple of days in its pattern. And what that does is it forms a nearly complete or an incomplete, a broken pentagram. And the symbol of, you know, Venus as a pentagram, and the pentagram being associated with the planet Venus, is something that goes back many centuries. And again, we show that to you, we explain it. And this part about Venus would seem to fit in with the theory of David Ovison, who is a Masonic writer, and Ovison wrote the book, The Secret of, or was it The Secret
Architecture of Our Nation's Capital.
There you go, on Washington, D.C. And in there he talks about Venus, and Ovison believes, the five-petaled flowers in Washington, D.C. are symbols of Venus as well. because of certain drawings that had been done that looked like five-petal flowers around its rotation. But it would fit in with Ovison's belief that hermetic philosophy, as above, so below, meaning that things on the earth are designed, especially cities and so on, are to be designed to reflect what's happening in the heavens. And Ovison's general theory is that Washington, D.C. was designed to reflect the constellation Virgo and to be in alignment with that, to draw upon the power of the constellation Virgo. And Venus, the planet Venus, represents the celestial virgin in its female aspect. And so that could well fit in to why L'Enfant would have put an unfinished pentagram in the street design.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that these people are involved in the occult, are all deeply involved in astrology, and we're told to avoid astrology because this, of course, is how you begin to tap into this other dimension. But these people were tapping into the other dimension and looking here for the answers to life's problems, and life's challenges, and, of course, looking there for the power that they would be able to use to bring about their dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion. So astrology plays a very important part in their beliefs. We sort of poo-poo it, as we but do not laugh at these people, because these people, many of them hold the reins of power in our nation today.
Well, the thing, one of the things that we tried to do, Dr. Stan, was to show that the philosophy that went into the design and building of Washington, D.C., really is a philosophy that has been utilized for thousands of years in city building. It goes back to ancient Egypt, to Rome, to Greece, to Babylon. It is the philosophy of the ancient secret societies, and really the ancient occult societies, the pagan societies of the ancient world. And that's why, you know, so many archaeologists and so on will tell you that the pyramids and Easter Island and Stonehenge and so on were all built in alignment with the stars to some extent. And this was an open practice among builders, among ancient masons and city builders and stone cutters and so on. They didn't just throw buildings up for utilitarian reasons. They were also done for astronomical reasons, for religious reasons, because they believed they were drawing upon certain spiritual energies from stars that they regarded quite often as living beings, as gods, if you were. And so they believed that by building a building or a monument or an entire city in alignment with the stars, you would draw upon that energy and receive, if you will, the blessing of the gods.
Well, because we believe, of course, we want the blessing of the Lord, the God of the Bible. They
Amen.
Want the blessing of the other God. That's really what it's all about. Of course, this idea of spiritual forces in conflict. One Christian and the other the occult.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. One of the repeated pattern that we found in Washington, D.C. was, again, this Pythagorean theorem, the A squared B squared equals C squared, is the male principle plus the female principle equals the divine offspring. And the divine offspring is, if you will, the Masonic or New Age Christ. It's the Christ figure. But the question that we ask, obviously, is, you know, is this Christ, how does this Christ figure differ from the Christ of the Bible? And we make it clear that they're not the same thing. And we believe this Masonic New Age Christ is, in fact, the Antichrist that is prophesied in the Scripture. And that's where all of this stuff, all of this symbolism, and all of this philosophy seems to be headed. It's there is a repeated doctrine about achieving perfection and the idea of the perfected man. And we've seen through 19th and 20th century occult writings not only of the concept of the individual person achieving perfection, but that one day a particular way-shower, a guru, a world teacher, if you will come forward. And as Christians, we recognize that figure as the Antichrist prophesied in the Bible.
And the other side, the people on the other side, are waiting expectantly, hopefully, that it's going to take place very, very soon. and the writings of Barbara Marks Hubbard and David Spangler and so many of the people we talk about and Constance Cumby talks about. Well, our guest has been Chris Pintle. Chris, do you have a website?
We do. You can go to adullamfilms.com, adullamfilms.com, or filmforjesus.com.
Okay, we'll be right back. Well, Chris, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, the thing that we do with the documentary, in this documentary, we really went to great lengths to go and talk not only to Christian researchers who have been studying these things for years, but so that people could see that this is not just something that Christian researchers believe and so on, but this is really what's going on out there, and this is, more importantly, it's what people who are involved with these secret societies believe. And so we sought out a number of Freemasons, a number of people who, in fact, we talked to, I think, two of the leading Masonic apologists who some people may recognize from the History Channel and the Discovery Channel. These guys show up quite a bit. And I really did our best to let these guys talk and to make their views known, and to have an opportunity to present their side of things, because they're often confronting a lot of the criticisms that come against Freemasonry and these secret societies. But if you watch and if you listen and you examine all the evidence that is presented by our other researchers and the other research that we've uncovered, it's very clear that their belief system goes in a completely different direction, and it's something that they recognize and they do acknowledge. But it's not biblical Christianity, not at all.
And that was so amazing when this one of the chief Masonic apologists tries to explain this secret name for God, which is Jabalal or
Yabalon.
Yabalon. And of course, what Baal is doing in there? Baal is the devil. So what's that name doing in the official name of God that they the Masons use? It's worth the whole cost of the whole film to see this Mason trying to explain why they use that name for God when it is the name of God, but it isn't the name of God. And poor guy, I felt almost sorry for them trying to justify and conceal from the people that this is who they really worship.
Yeah, that's just one of those. There's a number of moments like that where, where they're answering hard questions. And the thing is, I sent them the questions in advance, and I let them know. But the thing is, these guys actually tackle a lot of these arguments in their writings and on their websites and so on. And that's the reason I sought them out. I thought, you know, if they're willing to talk about this and present apologetics, then let's go and ask them some serious questions and see how they do.
Well, I thought it was a fascinating program. You present both sides, and maybe I'm a little prejudiced, but I think you did a wonderful job. Our guest has been Chris Pintle. The DVD, Riddles in Stone. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. God bless.
Bye-bye.